From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. The pilgrimage across the Overland Trails in the mid-19th century was a critical point in American history, but the stories of thousands of African Americans who were part of the journey have largely been untold. Sac State Emeritus Professor Shirley Ann Wilson Moore traced some of this history in her book, Sweet Freedom's Plains, African Americans on the Overland Trails, 1841 to 1869. I talked with her in 2017, and I asked her what was known about these travelers who were called Black Overlanders.
We know that their numbers are still up for grabs. We don't know how many. Estimates range from 15,000 to 50,000. Mm. But we know that many who came overland on the various overland trails, the main ones and the lesser known ones, some were enslaved and some were free people. We know that the slaves who came hoped to come to better themselves, even though that they were enslaved to their owners. They knew that the first steps out on those trails meant that everything was different. Everything had changed. And the Black people who were free who came overland were fleeing from, they hoped, from the laws and restrictions and customs that had kept them subordinate and kept them as second class. They weren't citizens, but as people who were non-persons. They came out of a sense of their personhood, both categories.
This was such a critical time in American history, and anybody going westward was seeking something different, something better. But it was different, it seems, in some ways, for the African Americans.
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you brought that up, because for Black people and white people who made that grueling journey, and it was grueling and hard for everyone, many of them held the same kinds of dreams: better freedom, more economic opportunities, even a time and place to reinvent yourself. But for African Americans, they made that trip with hopes of, as I said, escaping those things, the anti-Black laws, slavery, that their white counterparts didn't have to contend with and knew nothing of.
I think you would agree with me when I said stories will surprise people, because that's a reaction you're getting from your book, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, I always say that there's no need to fictionalize accounts mm-hmm. of African-American history or history of the West. There are stories enough in this book that I've uncovered through my research that could be made into feature-length motion pictures, novels.
Would you give one example, somebody that has still stayed in your mind or your heart since researching?
Well, I want to give you one of the very first examples that I came across that really kind of set the tone for me. The goals, the expectations of the journey. And this is from a diary of a white overlander, and that's where a lot of the material comes from, because they are the ones that recorded, for the most part, when they did, recorded their encounters with Black people. There's a man by the name of Delaney who was writing to his daughter in Missouri, his daughter Susan, and he was traveling in a wagon company that included a young Black man. He's identified only as Mr. Thompson's Negro boy, Lee. And when they set out in 1850, they were on the St. Joe Road, the road St. Joseph, Missouri. And Delaney knew that something was different about this slave who had been docile, who had been obedient, because the first steps out on the road, Delaney wrote, Lee, the young slave man, quote, was heard to say that he would not work for white men much longer. Delaney wrote to his daughter Susan that the trip seems to have made Lee got too big for his britches as soon as he got out of the state. And alarmed at this, he sold Lee. And he said, as he said, he made a tidy profit. And I think this, as outspoken as Lee was, He really encapsulated the hopes, most of which were kept to themselves because for their own safety, of most African Americans, especially the ones who were enslaved. If I can just read you one little chapter, and this was something that I found intriguing. These are fairly anonymous people, Black people, who came across the plains for the same reasons that Lee harbored, but they kind of kept to themselves. One woman wrote that she was traveling with her master, her owner, and she would work for her owner as he promised her. They were going to the gold fields, and a lot of the white overlanders caught gold fever and left. But she said that she would work for them because she had seven children who were still enslaved, and she hoped to buy each and every one of them out of slavery. And this is as close to her own words as I could get. This was, again, memorialized in a diary by a white overlander. And he wrote her words down.
I'm going to let people know that your copy of the book is paperclipped and flagged. And I can tell as you're flipping through the pages that so much of this is alive in you.
Oh,
in
yes.
Your
oh, yes.
Full of the details. Would you go to page 159 for me? And there's a little section titled Who They Were and Why They Went West.
Yes.
But it does make reference to the fact that we didn't learn about a lot of these stories in school because they weren't known. And as you said, the stories were in diaries or private documentation. So would you start reading there, please?
African Americans who headed west were cloaked in invisibility by law and custom. Yet most Black immigrants, enslaved and free, anticipated that all things might be possible once the trail was struck. The opportunity to escape bondage, to be free of racial persecution, and to prosper economically drove them across the plains, deserts, and mountains to the West. Whether unknown or anonymous, enslaved or free, the lyrics of a popular abolitionist hymn summed up their purposes. Behind I leave the whips and chains, before me spreads sweet freedom's plains.
Thus the title of the book. Would you talk about the challenges of these pioneers? Because there again, there's the challenge in general for anyone on these trails, the hardship, the life-endangering conditions. But for African Americans, there's a whole different category of challenge.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Challenges that really their white counterparts didn't face or even have to think about. For example, slaves who came, as I mentioned before, were at their owner's bidding. They were on call 24 hours a day. They did work that their white counterparts, their owners, didn't have to do. They were forced to do it. They were put in situations, not of their choosing, but were forced to follow their owners down paths that may have led to disaster, and I have some stories about that, or were foolhardy, and there's many stories about that. Even before they got jumped off onto the trails, many of them suffered from wagon companies that refused. They had in their charters they would not accept Blacks as paying passengers or passengers who worked. So many of them had to wait in those jumping off towns where people were provisioning themselves to make the journey before they could find a wagon company that would accept them. So and it, so the financial hardship was much more on them, weighed more heavily on them. Also, you have on the trails, they were more vulnerable to slave catchers, free Blacks and Blacks who were enslaved or fleeing slavery were vulnerable to being snatched up by slave catchers. They were vulnerable to being preyed upon by unscrupulous people who preyed on, you know, bandits and thieves and murderers and all sorts of people. Preyed on Blacks, especially because they had no rights. They had really very little recourse to the law.
The classic stories of the migration include waves of young men.
Yes.
And then families, too.
Yes.
In the African American migration, certainly there were single men, a wave of men. But tell me about women and children on the trail.
Women and children were prominent on the trail. Again, some were enslaved and some were free people. You know, I came across a story of a young boy, maybe 10 years old, who was a driver, that is an ox driver, who was there with his, apparently his owners, who was in a terrible accident that the wagon wheel crushed him. And fortunately, he made it back to health. But here's this child on the road on his own because he was the property of another person. There were women on the plains. I have a story, one of my very favorites. Two women, mother and daughter, were traveling together in a military wagon train. They had hired themselves on. They were free. They had hired themselves on as servants to do the cooking and the cleaning for the military company. But they were thrown out in the middle of nowhere with all their belongings scattered out. And a white overlander who was traveling that same road encountered them. And the woman said, look, my mother was thrown out. I was thrown out because my mother talked sassy to the major. Mm. And the mother told him, I am just as free as you are. I'm not used to that kind of treatment. Mm. And so she was summarily thrown out.
We just have a very little bit of time left, but I do want to ask you what this shows us about dealing with contemporary America and issues that we face now, not only in racial tensions, but in being pioneers in life.
That's a very good question. One hasn't been posed to me in that way. I know one of the things this has shown to me is that African Americans, Black people, men and women, young and old, were involved in every aspect of this nation's founding, every single aspect. Mm-hmm. There is not a task, not a profession, not a philosophy that African Americans were not involved in.
That was Sac State History Professor Emeritus Shirley Ann Wilson Moore. She talked with me in February of 2017 about her book, Sweet Freedom's Plains, African Americans on the Overland Trails, 1841 to 1869. You're listening to Encore Conversations on Insight on CAP Radio.